CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth to Boca Chica, Texas, the Stack Starship on Super Heavy. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're waiting, waiting, waiting. There's news here. Bob, a very good evening to you. Elon Musk is being direct in his expectations for the maiden voyage of Starship and Super Heavy. What are the dates looking now? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, we don't have a lot of new information. What we do have is a tweet by Elon Musk, and that's it. And his tweet, this was on Monday, April 10th, Starship launch trending towards near the end of the third week of April. Now, the last date they were aiming for was April 17th, which is the start of that week. So now he's saying the end of that week for the launch. What he's doing, I think, Musk, is pushing the launch back very tiny amounts each time to keep the pressure on the FAA, but he's being very diplomatic about it. He has said in a previous tweet last week that, quote, Starship is ready for launch, awaiting regulatory approval, close quotes. Once again, he's being very diplomatic. He doesn't want to make the federal bureaucrats his enemies. He wants to work with them, but he also wants to keep the pressure on to make them move faster. And in fact, by doing it this way, what he wants to do is let others put the pressure on him more bluntly, such as myself, and say that these guys have got to get their act together, stop delaying progress. And so that's where we stand. They were supposed to do a static fire dress rehearsal countdown this week, but I've heard no word about when that'll happen at this point. First talked about it on Monday, but I've heard nothing. That doesn't mean it isn't going to happen, but this week, early in the week, it's supposed to happen, and I've heard nothing. This is giving us a hint of, John, what's going to be the case in our second story today. So if you don't mind, I'm going to go straight to it. A RAND Corporation report has recommended to Congress that they allow the moratorium on full regulation for commercial human spaceflight to expire in October of this year. And there's some history here. Back in 2004, Congress passed the Commercial Space Launch Amendments Act, which essentially set up regulatory framework for controlling commercial space, specifically having to do with human tourism. And when they did that, they also included in it a, quote, a learning period where the strict regulatory rules would not go into effect while companies tried to figure out how to do this because it's an experimental situation. Well, that original moratorium was supposed to end in 2015. They've extended it. Congress has extended it several times, so now it's expiring in October 1st of 23 this year. And what the RAND Corporation has recommended, despite the fact that really the FAA is not ready to do this, they say let the moratorium expire so the government will have the power to do full regulatory control on the human spaceflight done by private companies. That full regulatory control is supposed to be comparable to what the regulatory framework is on airlines. In other words, they want to regulate commercial space as if it's as safe as an airline. What I see is doing, and I wrote about this back in 2004, no one would listen, and even the industry was in favor of the law, and basically that law now is a sword of Damocles over their heads, because what I see happening once this law is passed is you're going to see an incredibly quick slowdown in commercial space, private enterprise, because the regulatory framework of the government is going to step in, and like the FAA is now doing to SpaceX, they're going to demand everything slow down. And what's really ironic about it is that the people who are doing this regulatory slowdown will be bureaucrats in Washington. They will have limited engineering understanding of what the problems are. And the people they'll be regulating will be the companies themselves, which know the details and really know what to do. And they will not be in charge, the people who know what to do. It'll be the bureaucrats in Washington instead, whose only real purpose is to wield power and stymie creativity. And so that's what we're facing right now. Now, there are rumors. There are lots of stories from sources within Congress that Congress is going to extend that moratorium again. And yeah, I'm sure they are. But this, as I say, is a sword of Damocles, because what SpaceX is experiencing right now with the FAA is what will eventually be the case with all commercial space when this regulatory framework goes into effect. And I list in my post on Behind the Black some of the things that are in that regulatory framework that will make it very difficult for commercial space to function.
All right, let's think ahead, Bob, because the FAA stops at the shoreline. It doesn't extend into Central America. It doesn't extend into Venezuela.
Oh, no, that's not true, John. I have to cut you off because this is something my readers do all the time. They say, well, why don't we just simply move out of the U.S.? You can't. It's a rocket company. You can't. The regulatory framework in the U.S. applies to every American company, no matter where they go, unless they move everything, do all construction, everything goes. And even then, it's questionable they get away with it because patents would be in the U.S. And, the U.S. would still, its activists would still reach out. So other countries, yes, might move in, but they're not going to be American companies. They're not going to be based in America, and they're not going to have any Americans involved.
A Venezuela rocket company that imitates SpaceX or Blue Origin is credible and cheaper and would provide an adversary advantages that the United States could not match with its regulatory environment. The model for this, Bob, is the People's Republic of China that routinely drops boosters on land. And so that's an extreme version of what happens when you're not regulating rocket launches. And so what you're describing, and I think it's very credible, is that they'll drive the business into the hands of other surrogates, and the surrogates will go forward regardless of who is in charge in the capital.
Yeah, in that sense, you're correct. And what you're describing actually is the solution, which is competition. Because if our federal government squelches American industry here and then others start to move in and take over, if there's any life left in the American culture, they will say, we got to fix this. And they'll cut back on the regulatory framework and private enterprise will surge forward again. But that's where we stand. We are looking at a threat to the right now resurging and booming American rocket industry, which is going to put us on the planets very shortly if we allow it to continue. If we don't allow it to continue, others will do it instead.
We move. All right. SpaceX is ready. The FAA is ready. We're all waiting for the date, but we still need clearance, right, Bob? It still has to be a document that has not.
FAA has got to clear that license, and they're not doing it. It's just day after day we wait, and it hasn't been done.
And there's no update. Musk himself is not giving us an update. Just that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we move from that to a startup for Space Force. We better do some definitions, Bob. What is Space Force? What is its mission?
Space Force is the military's space-centered bureaucracy for launching surveillance and reconnaissance and doing things in space for military purposes. It was created during the Trump administration out of the Air Force with the idea that the Air Force wasn't focused on space and so therefore often gave it a second billing. And by creating a Space Force, you'd be able to focus on doing space things. And so far there's been a mixed result, but the Space Force does seem to be following NASA in becoming a customer and not a designer of spacecraft and satellites. And this is a problem the Air Force has. It was trying to design everything, and so little was getting built. That's why they wanted to do this in the military, to try to free up military operations so that they could get out of the turf war. And so in the Space Force, they are more likely to look for private enterprise to do what they need to do. And I've got a post on Behind the Black about a startup in Colorado called True Anomaly. And what their job is, they are proposing to build satellites for the Space Force that could fly in formation very close to other satellites, including the satellites of other nations, and do reconnaissance of them, provide videos and data of those space objects as it's operated from the ground or with autonomously. Now, this is something that both China and Russia have done recently, tests, but the U.S. has not, as far as I can remember, in recent years. And so what they're doing, there's this private company is offering to build these satellites for the Space Force at a bargain rate. They've raised $30 million in investment capital, and they'll build it for the Space Force to do exactly this kind of work. And this is an example of letting private enterprise do things, John, and not getting in the way. We got a second startup story in Australia, John, that's related to this.
I like this one, Bob, the whale. Go ahead, tell the story.
Yeah, this is a startup in Australia that has been part of 29 startups that the Australian government has given a total of $14 million in development money to try to get their designs worked out. This particular company called Paladin wants to do space junk removal. And their design is remarkably simple, and it really changes the paradigm, because every other space junk proposal I've seen has been generally very complicated. The Japanese have proposed using nets, harpoons, others do grappling arms or docking mechanisms. It's a lot of very complicated things. What Paladin is proposing is a whale, like Jonah and the Whale, quite literally, a satellite that would have doors that would open in the front. It would just simply move into position so that the junk would fly into a box on the interior of the satellite. Doors would then close, and then the satellite would move. The satellite would move to a position where it would then release that box to have it deorbit over the ocean and burn up. And this kind of thing could pick up multiple pieces of junk before it gets rid of the box. And to quote the CEO and founder of this idea, the European Space Agency is currently paying 100 million euros to remove just one piece of space junk. That's the value they put on the job. Imagine the value of being able to remove hundreds of pieces of space junk. And that's what his concept is. I think it's a very good idea. It's in Australia. The Australian government is trying to encourage private enterprise. And they've made a proposal that I think is really interesting. It's in the early development, so we have to wait and see.
And Bob, what has happened to the idea that if you launch a satellite, you've got to build in a deorbiting aspect of it?
Well, this was proposals put forth by the FCC outside its statutory legal authority. They proposed that they would regulate and make sure that every satellite launched had a use-by date and a deorbit requirements. And they were really stretching their regulatory authority. So right now it is in limbo. I'm not sure whether they might claim they've put the regulations in place, but I don't know if they have the legal authority to do it. And I'm not sure private companies are going to follow them exactly. You know, as private companies, as a general rule, are being very responsible right now. They're planning this themselves. So they might find these regulations pretty irrelevant. If a company finds itself hindered by the FCC's pseudo regulations, they might end up suing. So that's where we stand right now. Private companies generally recognize the problem and don't want to create more space junk. They're trying to solve this problem.
And now we go to Venezuela, which is why I mentioned Venezuela earlier as a possible source of future space launching. This is a lunar base for China. Where, Bob?
On the moon. China has a project to build its lunar base on the south pole of the moon. And they have partnered with Russia, though Russia is probably going to contribute very little to that project. China's going to do it all. But China's also using it for public relations, much like the U.S. and Soviet Union did in the 60s with their space programs. They recently had invited a bunch of South American space bureaucrats to China to view the opening of their new National Deep Space Exploration Laboratory. This is a place where they do research for deep space planetary missions. And they offered to Brazil to join in this partnership to build the lunar base. Brazil has not accepted the invitation. But Venezuela, that booming economy of social communism down in South America, has accepted the offer and is now signing a memorandum of understanding where they will jointly work together to build China's international lunar station on the moon. Well, this is the first nation outside Russia to join this project, but it's kind of ridiculous because Venezuela is not capable of doing anything since it's a bankrupt communist state that can barely feed its own people. It's public relations. It's making sure that they can justify in Venezuela the jobs for the bureaucrats within their government while everyone else starves. That's how communism works. And China's going to help them do it, and that's where we stand, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring on the surface of Mars. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.